Many people mourned the end of a publishing era when Time Incorporated merged with Warner Communications in 1989. Henry Luce's publishing empire had been around for 67 years, and two of its magazines, Life and Time, were once the most influential magazines in America. The deal that brought Time and Warner together was described by one financial reporter as the greatest spectacle in the history of the takeover game. John Leonard's been reading about it in the new book, To the End of Time, The Seduction and Conquest of a Media Empire, by Richard Clurman. Here's John's review.
As far as it goes, Richard Clurman's account of how Time, Inc. and all its magazines happened to merge with the Hollywood Joy Boys at Warner Communications, with nothing lost save honor and lots of money, is an angry delight. The empire that Luce built looked up one morning in the go-go 80s to decide that people weren't reading anymore, at least not in the numbers they used to, and certainly not any of the new magazines dreamed up in the Time Inc. boardroom, like TV Cable Week. It never occurred to anybody in Rockefeller Center to publish smaller, better magazines. Seeking instead to diversify and synergize, they looked elsewhere in the entertainment industry for a way to get rich quick. According to Clurman, a 20-year veteran of the company who quit in 1975, almost every decision they made was a dumb one. When they could have invested in Ted Turner's CNN, or teamed up with other such venerable news organizations as the New York Times, CBS, Gannett, or Knight Ridder, they chose instead to invite, and then reject, a takeover bid from Paramount, which cost them $14 billion. They then persuaded Steve Ross to let them buy Warner for more than it was worth, after which this man who seems never to have read a book, and seldom have ever read Time magazine, became their czar, paying himself a neat $79 million a year, more than the entire editorial budget for America's oldest news weekly, while writers and editors were gunned down on Sixth Avenue and in all the foreign bureaus. To understand how this could have happened, you must grasp the energizing principle, the jumping beans of go-go capitalism in the 80s. In order to buy what you can't afford, you go to the go-go banks and borrow the go-go money, and your collateral consists of the assets of the company you want to buy. It's all done with mirrors, like snorting a line of cocaine. This is the story Clurman tells, sometimes wickedly, sometimes mournfully. Mournfully because he misses what he calls time culture, an editorial integrity immune to the blandishments of advertising, disinterested information as a sacred trust. But there's another story he omits. The sad fact of the matter is that Steve Ross didn't invent the swimsuit issue of Sports Illustrated, nor did he kill off a good magazine, like Life, to make room for a bad one, like People. And long before Life died for People's sins, Time Inc.'s editors in New York were meddling with a copy of their correspondence from abroad to make the whole world look more like the inside of Henry Luce's head, as we know from dozens of memoirs, including those of Theodore H. White, one of the many great reporters who had to leave Luce to speak the truth. Wonderful writers like James Agee, Dwight MacDonald, and John Kenneth Galbraith had likewise to decamp. From the Great Depression through Vietnam, the arts coverage of the Newsweekly was nothing but smarty pants, as if Time had been invented in the first place as a sort of early warning radar system or alarm clock to alert middle-class America to the next outrage of the avant-garde. What happened in the go-go 80s, and not only at Time Inc., was that slick agitprop yielded to empty packaging.
John Leonard is media critic for CBS Sunday Morning. He reviewed Richard Clurman's To the End of Time, published by Simon & Schuster.